Let's just say that one of the arrows in that quiverful was really, really, really twisted.
It's showtime.
Yes, indeed it is. It is the ninth day of December, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes if you're listening live. And also, it's a great place to go to get the podcast. Each and every episode. And if you are listening live right now, well, you know, feel free to bebop on over to headon.live and click on chat room, pop right in. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto DeShot and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program at The Horn begins with gratitude, this program being no different in that regard. And so, consequently, we send out thanks to our ninth day of the month subscribers. We're moving into that sort of thin area of for the subscribers where we've got one or two or, you know, what have you. Okay, just waiting for the interface to come up so I can figure out what's going on. They've changed it, so it's hard to find. I'm not looking at... That's just weird. Try that one more time. I don't need... There we go. Much better, I think. They've changed the freaking app, and I didn't realize it. Well, thank you to... here, let's try this another way. I love it when they do that, but... thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. And thanks as well to Mary Bill. Thank you, Mary Bill. Thank you to Khalil. Thanks, Khalil, so much. And thanks to James. Thank you so very kindly, James, for being, and Khalil and Ralphs and Mary Bill for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep all of the plates spinning on all the sticks. The fundraising goal for this evening stands at $1,090, and that would bring us even with this week. We got some great help wiping out the remainder of November early in the week through Randy Radar's challenge, and that's tremendously appreciated. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you'd like to help out, just run over to headon.live, and, well, the PayPal interface is right there on the main page. If you want to do Patreon or something like that, or become a Patreon subscriber, you got to click the Contribute tab. There's always Venmo, and I haven't set up the Bitcoin wallet yet, but maybe that's somewhere out in the future. I don't know. But at any rate, it would be nice to knock some of this down this evening so that we're not looking at a great big whopping fundraising deficit. And a reminder that Billable Rick's challenge from yesterday that I didn't give the deserved attention to because of the long form conversation that went on, and so consequently, let me get that out there early on so that we can deal with it this evening, hopefully. The Don't Give Them a Chance challenge, taken from a quote from Amy Schneider, the Jeopardy champion from Ohio, who reminded people that where voting for the GOP in Ohio is concerned, She said, to any followers in Ohio, next year, remember that no matter who the Republican candidate is, one of their goals in office will be to make life harder for me personally. Don't give them the chance. And so, Billable Rick said, in honor of Amy Schneider for Wednesday's program, I'm offering up the Don't Give Them the Chance Challenge. I'll pony up $25 toward the program, which I'll double to $50 upon my challenge being met. So if there's $25 out there floating around, Billable Rick will actually not double it, but triple it. So if somebody comes up with $25, it will become $75 thanks to Billable Rick's Don't Give Them the Chance Challenge. And that's mighty generous of you, Billable Rick, and deeply appreciated. Okay. And so thanks very, very much. It turns out longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky is invariably honest and candid. Said, I have the man cave computer hooked to the 55-inch TV in the living room. Too cold in the man cave. Are we getting to the point where it's finally cold out there? Okie doke. Well, enjoy it. That 55-inch monitor must be a thing to behold. So that's all the housekeeping for this evening. I will be knocking off a little bit early this evening. Been getting 2 hours in, almost 3 hours. This is one of those nights when I have a telemeeting that I have to attend for the Fayette County Democratic Executive Committee. So I will be knocking off early for that. I loved the conversation with Terry last night. It was, and I hope you did as well. I got to say that I'm a little bit, I think stir crazy. Is a good term. Don't go out much because A, still recuperating. B, COVID crockpot here. And as a result of that, mostly I just see the inside of this apartment. And Annette and I get along very, very well, and she takes excellent care of me. But still, just sort of the daily grind of these relatively four walls, he begins to tell on you a little bit. I've watched a lot of Netflix, a lot of HBO Max, a lot of Amazon Prime, a lot of Hulu, it begins to tell on you. But I'm getting my strength back. And I move around pretty well okay. It's just that, you know, getting out and doing everything and then staying safe. You know, we've probably got a grocery store trip in our future tomorrow or Saturday, something like that. But I confess to being a little bit on the cabin fever side of things. And there's and of course I have, without going into entirely too much gory detail. I operate on an every 8 hour schedule here so that it's basically that and then shower and then relax and then 8 hours later that, shower, relax, 8 hours later, right. So it's just sort of
it's Thursday.
That's not supposed to be there. No, not at all. But that's it. It plays with your mind a little bit, to say the least. And anybody who's ever been through any recuperative process knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's not limited to what I had done. And in the meanwhile, I'm anxious to get back home and see the hills and wait for spring and get through January and February and half of March and then start looking for little green things to start poking their heads out of the soil. That's just kind of my kind of my reality right now. But like I said, it was it's a thorny kind of thorn in the side Thursday, without a doubt. And we've got the stories to prove it. Big news coming out of Arkanstan, that pious and puissant state, God fearing from tip to toenails. A jury came back late last night and then early today, announced their verdict. Former reality TV star and good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian, member of a Quiverful family. Remember, the Quiverful cult thinks that you gotta treat a woman's reproductive organs like a clown car, and keep her barefoot and pregnant so that she'll be the way Jesus wants her to be. And they view their family as a quiver in which one keeps one's many arrows. I'm not sure who they plan to shoot, but well, never mind. Our pal Haley in Arkansas alerted me to this, and one hopes that justice has been and will continue to be done. Josh Duggar, of course, we knew he was, we've suspected based upon allegations that he was a skeevy, creepy Christian perv for a very, very long time. And well, now a jury of six men and six women have said, yep, right all along. And they convicted him on two counts, one of possession of child pornography and another of receiving child pornography. And he's facing up to 20 years in prison and $500,000 in fines. My guess is he will probably, I wonder if he'll even see the inside of a jail. It is, after all, Arkanstan. And I don't know, was this, it's not clear in the report that I saw whether it was a federal court or a state court. Each of the counts he was convicted on, and this is a case of bad journalism, it doesn't explain why, each of the counts he was convicted on carries the maximum of 20 years in prison, $250,000 in fines. But the receipt of child pornography, which is deemed the more serious charge, is the only one that's going to be considered at sentencing. Don't know why the possession charge doesn't get considered. Now, this much is encouraging. He was immediately taken into custody and taken away to some sort of pre-sentencing detention. And the judge in the case set the sentencing hearing for about 4 months down the road, so sometime in March, you know, when the little green shoots are poking their head through the soil there in Arkanstan, too. And, of course, the pettifogger for Josh Duggar said, well, we're going to appeal this here verdict. And there are long and crocodile tear filled complaint. That ain't me. I ain't guilty. Yeah, he used the computer, according to the findings of the testimony. He used the computer at his car lot office and used a torrent service to download, images showing the sexual abuse of toddlers and other children. And he did this in May 2019. There was a battle of the experts in the trial, and they contended over how certain it was that Josh Duggar, and isn't it Josh who also sexually abused his sister? Ding 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 ding. Yeah. They had a battle of the experts over how likely it was that Josh was the one who did the downloading. And so the prosecution brought forth evidence about geolocation and timestamps and text messages. Oh, well, it's when there's text messages that really does sort of, the defense continuing. Well, you know, that could have been downloaded by somebody somewhere else and put on his computer, or it could have been somebody else at the car lot. Yeah. But then this past Monday, the court allowed the prosecution to call somebody named Bobby Holt, a family friend of the Duggars. And Bobby Holt told the jury about something that happened on March 30th, 2003. Good God, 18 years ago, when Josh Duggar touchy-touchied the private parts of four juveniles who were between the ages of 5 and 12. My God, this is getting nauseating early in the program, isn't it? And the judge then told the jury, listen, he's not on trial for child sexual abuse. He's on trial for possession of child porn. But it might, this evidence might go toward establishing a motive for why he might have had the kiddie porn. Mm-hmm. And this twisted arrow was the first one in the quiver of Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar's 19 kids. Yeah, that whole stupid show was called 19 Kids and Counting. And of course, you couldn't drag it out of the American Family or the Family Research Council with white hot tongs now. But yeah, they gave him a job, Josh Duggar, and they made him the executive director of the Family Research Council. And of course, Josh Duggar, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, Josh Duggar led rallies against the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And went on a faith family freedom tour that was again aimed against the rights of perfectly normal, perfectly decent, non-kiddie porn possessing, non-kid fondling members of the LGBTQ community. Because there's a lot more of that in the straight, cishet Christian community than there is elsewhere. So he got caught. And then the allegations about him diddling his sister came out. And so he resigned as executive director of the Family Research Council. Mm-hmm. And then he went into long-term rehab. Yeah. Let's just say the long-term rehab. Apparently it didn't take. Stephen New York says, when you mentioned the kiddie porn, I had the feeling of not a thorn in the side, but a thorn right in the urethra. Yes, I did go there. God. Don't go there again, okay? I'm struggling to keep the din-din down. But you know, that's one of the thorns. And well, you got to wonder how prison's going for him. But and by the way, another it's just a little nexus for me. I've bragged on this program about the sourdough that they bake over at the Publix grocery stores. And of course, we don't have any Publixes in West Virginia, and we don't have any very good sourdough. But oh well. I love it. I can't help it. But I ran across a story today. It came out of the Washington Post about the heiress to the Publix fortune. Her name is Julie Fancelli. She's a 72-year-old grandma. And it is emerging that Julie Fancelli was probably the primary sponsor of the January 6th insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States and the seat of said constitutional governance. She gave $650,000 to three separate organizations who helped stage and then promote the so-called Stop the Steal rally that was the launching point for the barking, grunting, hooting, groaning, LARPing, grabulating gang of maggots, 12,000 or so at least strong, who then converged upon the Capitol and proceeded to attack it. Yeah. There's evidence constantly being developed, but at present, she is the, as far as public knowledge, she gave more than anybody else toward making that happen. In the Washington Post report, they say, in the weeks leading up to the rally, Fancelli frequently emailed to her relatives and friends, and God, some of us probably have relatives like this, only they're not multimillionaires. She splits her time between, like, Florida and Tuscany. But, you know, they'll forward just about any wacky-ass right-wing meme with things like, you won't believe this, or... the real truth about COVID, the real truth about the vaccine. Well, in this case, Julie Fancelli, age 72, filthy freaking rich, started forwarding emails around to members of her family about, of course, Alex Jones. Yeah. In the weeks leading up to the rally, Fancelli frequently emailed to her relatives and friends links to Jones's talk show, according to two people with knowledge of the emails who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss private communications. Jones was a leading proponent of false claims, and Trump's reelection had been foiled by, election fraud, and that Congress could refuse to certify Biden's victory. And so she was going to go to the Stop the Steal rally, but at the last minute she decided not to because she got a little worried about all the maggots, all the unvaccinated, unmasked maggots who were going to be there and might end her 72-year run on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Going on, the Post article says, Fancelli was a regular listener to Jones's show and had an assistant make contact with him at his office in Austin. And my God, his pink little ears must have perked right up, to find out how she could support Trump's attempt to undermine Biden's victory. She and Jones talked by phone at least once between December 27th and January 1st. Mm-hmm. You'll recall that Alex Jones has been subpoenaed to testify before the January 6th commission and said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to claim the Fifth Amendment because they'll try to trap me in a lie. Which, as noted previously, means that he had every intention of that if he was compelled to testify, that in fact he would lie. Not a great strategy. Mm-mm. And curiously, Fancelli's brother-in-law, a guy by the name of Barney Barnett, and he was an executive at Publix, and said, well, yeah, I'm a Republican. When queried by the Washington Post, said, I'm not tantalized by that fellow, meaning Alex Jones. But apparently she is, and a lot of other people are addicted to the detriment of the country. Julie is one of the finest people I know, and I'm sorry she got tied up with this guy. And her sister then said, well, you know, Alex Jones is kind of a rabble-rouser, and I don't listen to that. I listen to the regular news, which by then I'm sure she means fucking Fox. That guy's crazy. Everybody knows Trump lost. Ooh, I bet Christmas among the public's heirs and heiresses is going to be a real Lulu this year. And it's caused a problem for Publix. Because there are people who say, no way, not going to shop at Publix anymore, not as long as y'all are down there wallering in the dirt with the insurrectionists. So, and these people are divested from Publix now. Publix is not them, and they are not Publix. But the company did feel compelled to put out a press statement saying that they are deeply troubled by Julie Fancelli's involvement in the insurrection against constitutional governance on January the 6th, 2021. Now, Julie Fancelli gave the Post a statement as well. She wouldn't do an interview, but she said, I am a proud conservative and have real concerns associated with election integrity, yet I would never support any violence, particularly the tragic and horrific events that unfolded on January 6th. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Election integrity. Right. I wonder if Julie Fancelli was concerned about election integrity when real live, no kidding, Nazis from Idaho ran robocalls against Andrew Gillum in his contest against Ron Monkey Up Duplantis. I wonder if that bothered her. Nah, she went, probably not, because she apparently went right out to the polls and voted along with the Nazis for Ron Monkey Up death sentence. And since the time that she was giving money to the maggots for their insurrection, she has apparently not repented, because this past September, she gave $5,800 to Representative Matthew M. Rosendale of Montanistan. Our pal Irwin might recognize his name. Well, Representative Matthew M. Rosendale was one of the 21 members of the House Republican Caucus who voted against giving the Congressional Gold Medal to the Capitol police officers who actually defended the Capitol against the maggot insurrectionists. And she gave $1,000 to a guy who unsuccessfully ran for mayor of Lakeland, Florida. And that guy had previously thanked Onan, you know, the network that spills its news upon the ground, for correctly referring to Trump as the president of the United States, even after Joe Biden had been inaugurated. And all of this is noteworthy. Because of some of the things that we're finding out about who else, Mark Meadows. Among other things, Mark Meadows, who had been Nitwit Nero's chief of staff and was right there in the thick of things as the insurrection against constitutional governance was being planned, Mark Meadows, back in 2017, was interviewed by the Christian Broadcast Network, you know, Pat Robertson's Dodge. Well, Pat has stepped aside and I guess is being replaced by his equally gross son. But in 2017, he said, I didn't ever plan on being in Congress, but God had other plans for me. And then blamed God again for the fact that he went to work for Nitwit Nero. The president of the United States was asking me to serve my country, and the answer was going to have to be yes. As my wife would put it later, God had cornered me. And I wonder if God forced his tongue down his throat or anything. I don't know. His wife's brother-in-law said Mark Meadows was nuts for going to work for Nitwit Nero. But Mrs. Meadows said, you know, we're not even in control of our own lives. God is controlling us. And that means that, you know, they don't actually have any free will. Everything's predestined. Mother Meadows said, we didn't have any choice. God cornered us. And so now that he has written a book and told us all about how Nitwit Nero was infected as fuck when he was going around the country, was in fact infected with the Rona when he gave his bizarro world performance at the presidential debate, where he was screaming at the top of his lungs and trying to spew viral particles across the stage at Joe Biden. Masks work, by the way. Nobody's really pointed that out, but yeah, that's pretty compelling proof. Having put that out there and having had it become national news, Nitwit Nero got really upset with him and said, you know, Mark Meadows is just telling fake news. And then Mark Meadows went on some right-wing network and said, you know, it's definitely fake news. Yeah, I lied my ass off all the way through this book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So, you know, with that in mind, bear in mind the fact that he's probably going to be cited for contempt of Congress. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Lord knows he thumbed his nose. He was cooperating. That's the weird thing. He was cooperating with the Congress. And then he said, after Nitwit Nero gave him shit for it, he soiled his pants and began backtracking, part of that being the claim that his own book was fake news. But he also ceased his participation with the January 6th Commission and filed a suit against the January 6th Commission, saying that their subpoena was overbroad and burdensome. Every subpoena, we must remember, is burdensome. Maybe even scary. Overbroad? Well, I'm sure that, I don't know. I don't think the subpoena called on him to turn over his password to spankmeivebeennaughty.com, but who knows? It's just a desperate attempt to muddy up the works until he can hopefully outlast the Congress, and that great Jubilee morning arrives in January of 2023, when, if you listen to the for-profit media, Republicans are going to just sweep out every Democrat and have absolute control of the House, maybe the Senate, you know, because they're, like I said last night, they're making it a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so if he can, he's just trying to run out the clock. I hope he is unsuccessful. But we are finding out things, because he turned over some 6,000 pages of documents. Some of which are bound to be damning. One of the things that has been discovered is that, Chairman Benny Thompson, chair of the January 6th Commission, publicly stated that Mark Meadows, and maybe this was for the benefit of an audience of one, Mark Meadows gave the committee already an email that he received that had a 38-page PowerPoint slideshow in it, the title of which was Election Fraud, Foreign Interference, and Options for 6 Jan. And writing on Twitter, Karen Piper, who said she had reviewed portions of the slideshow, said, "It's the craziest thing I've ever seen." She said the document was insane. They had plans, among other things, for the National Guard in each state to be federalized to count only legitimate paper ballots. And then the U.S. Marshals were going to be called upon to provide a protective perimeter around the locations. Another portion of the document says, a trusted lead counter will be appointed with authority from the POTUS to direct the actions of select federalized National Guard units to support from DOJ, DHS, and other U.S. government agencies as needed to complete a recount of the legal paper ballots for the federal elections in all 50 states. Now, when you hear something like that, are you like me? Do you think back to the attempt to transition from the Nitwit Nero administration to the Biden administration, and how the Nitwit Nero administration absolutely refused to participate? At first, they said, "Yeah, maybe," and then, "No, we won't." They refuse to participate in a meaningful transition of administrative power. Guess why? They never intended. They never intended to relinquish power. There was talk of declaring a national security emergency. Any electronic votes were going to be declared null and void. And NASA astronaut Sid Gutierrez was supposedly going to lead the task force. Yeah. And Mark Meadows knew about every bit of this. And over at archive.org, the slideshow is available for any of us who would care to view it. Let's see. Recommendations. Brief senators and congressmen on foreign interference. Declare national security emergency. Foreign influence and control of electronic voting systems. Declare electronic voting in all states invalid. Wow. They really meant to do this. We find out every day how close we came to losing everything. And we're still having a hard time getting Merrick Garland to understand the nature and severity of the insurrection and the crisis that it precipitated. Damnedest thing. And you know, I know I say it over and over and over again, but it's because I'm trying to get a point across. Y'all, they're going to do it again. If there's any wonder, well, today, the man who looks like hot dog smell, hot dog water, sorry, correction. The man who looks like hot dog water smells old hot dog water. Interviewed Matt, it just gets worse on his blather program. And they sat there on the air in front of anybody who cared to watch. And they engaged in an ongoing conspiracy to overturn the government of the United States of America. Damnedest thing.
Follow up.
So what I'm saying is that, you know, stagecraft is statecraft. People didn't like that Donald Trump raised his voice, but sometimes you got to raise your voice to raise a ruckus and to raise an army of patriots who love this country and will fight for her. And if we get more of them in Congress, then that is exactly what we're going to do. We're going to operationalize the performance to go right after the people who are imposing the vaccine mandates, who are enriching themselves, and who are selling out the country.
So for starting with the Joanne Reed, the Chris Hayes, the Rachel Maddow, the brains of the operation over there for the Democratic left, understand, This is a theory of governing, right? And it's fresh and it's new. This is Trumpism in power. That's why we went to the 4,000 shock troops we have to have that's going to man the government and get them ready.
Hold on just a minute. Did I miss something? I mean, granted, I was kind of loopy for about a week between, say, the 9th and 15th of 17th, 18th. Yeah, I was kind of loopy for about a week and a half there in November. But did I miss the memo or the announcement or the parade or whatever it was that declared that Rachel Maddow and Joy Reid are in charge of Democratic policy? I mean, people tune into this shit and I didn't know Rachel. Well, I guess she is. I reckon she thinks she's intelligent or something for a woman. And I don't know. Maybe since she's moved along from Alex Jones, maybe Joyce Fanchelli's tuning into this madness. I'm sure Matt, it gets worse and Steve Bannon would love to have some of that cool cash. I don't know. Maybe the family's gotten together with her and said, Yeah, listen, Joyce, do that again. You're about to tank. You're about to tank the business our family founded. If you do that again, we're gonna have to send you to have your calendar checked, honey. But no, she's still giving money to Looney Tunes Republican candidates from Montana and Lakeland, Florida, and the lot. So maybe I don't know. Joy Reid, Rachel Maddow. Yeah. Okay. What?
Mandates who are enriching themselves and who are selling out the country.
So for starting with the Joyanne Reid, the Chris Hayes, the Rachel Maddow, the brains of the operation over there for the Democratic left.
Cool.
Understand, this is a theory of governing, right? And it's fresh and it's new. This is Trumpism in power. That's why we went to the 4,000 shock troops we have to have that's going to man the government and get them ready now.
Shock troops and get them ready now to run the government.
Now, right? We're going to hit the beach. You know, you have the landing teams and the beachhead teams, all that nomenclature they use when President Trump wins again in 2024 or before, right?
Or before. Y'all, they're going to do it again. Yo. And when they do, not that it would mean anything or, you know, I don't want to be on the cover of the National Enquirer every couple of weeks like Gene Dixon was for 30 years or whatever, but can I get a little credit? You know, when they do it again, maybe somebody out there, hey, my buddy Chris Hayes, hey, Robin, you kept saying, y'all, they're going to do it again, and they did it again. How did you know? Well, Chris, I just knew. Because maggot's going to maggot.
You're going to have those as the 4,000 political appointees. On Capitol Hill, you're going to have Gates and others. And no more Trey Gowdy's, no more Powder Puff Derby. This is going to be hardcore accountability at every committee.
Yes.
Yeah, hardcore accountability led by Matt It Gates Worse, the guy who was so goddamn dumb, he left a payment public that he made to an underage girl that he and his buddy hired for sex. That's the brain trust that's going to run the next coup. Of course, I guess it would be a little inconvenient to mention something like that.
And we are going to go after this administrative state, and we're going to start at the Department of Justice and the FBI. That's the job I want. You know,
hey, wow, you know what that reminds me of? Hey, which one of the history plays is it in Shakespeare, where one of the characters utters the phrase, first thing we do, and you know, people who hate lawyers, just, you know, because it's easy to hate lawyers, they always cite this one because they think, oh, that's funny. The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. Well, Matt It Gates Worse just echoed that sentiment. The problem is the person in Shakespeare who says the first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers, that guy is laying out a plan for tyranny, for dictatorial government, for autocracy, for dictatorship. Because the lawyers are the bulwark against it. And they're going to go after the FBI and the Department of Justice, such as it is. They kind of got a friend in them right now. Never mind. Because if you can get rid of them, well, you can pretty much have your way.
Send me over to the Judiciary Committee, and their sphincters will tighten because they've been doing a lot of corrupt things over there. The FBI and the Department of Justice have become the enforcement wing of the Democratic Party.
Is that your priority? I mean, I've argued for years now, even when I left inside the Trump administration, before at Breitbart, and then after I left, you need a commission like they had back in the Church Committee to go through the CIA, all the national security apparatus. You would actually do it from Capitol Hill. You would say, hey, we're going to get to the bottom of the national security. security apparatus. We're going to get. And by the way,
I don't need a new committee. I just need a gavel, Steve.
And you don't. And you, coming from Pensacola in your district, a super patriot. It's not that we're anti-military at all.
No.
But whatever this has devolved into, we're anti what this is, right? And this has got to stop.
Well, I mean, we are doing this to vindicate the patriotism of the people who wear the uniform and who serve our country in a variety of ways, in law enforcement and really throughout our society. And those people feel betrayed by what is going on in this town.
What? Do you have to drop acid to actually be able to translate that madness? Well, nonetheless, they are, they're going to do it again. The tell was when Bannon said, when Trump becomes president again in 2024, or perhaps sooner. I have no doubt that the next coup is already fully planned. And, you know, Merrick Garland may very well be sitting in his attorney general office going, what? When you go to the sentencing for that next insurrectionist, make sure you don't hurt their feelings a whole bunch. See if you can get them like maybe 48 hours in the stir and a fine of $3.72. Can you do that for me? Get them ready now. The shock troops, the 4,000 people who are going to run the government instead of, I guess, the people who actually are supposed to run all the government. Hey, thank you to Ralph serving as our Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee this evening. First thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers, comes from Act 4, Scene 2 of Part 2 of Shakespeare's Henry VI. And it's uttered by a guy who is a killer in the play. Because he sees lawyers as the source of the problems of seizing power. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, by the way, there is some good news. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled. They said that Nitwit Nero has no power to block his White House records from being released to the House committee investigating January 6th. This is something that in legal terms, this is a complicated legal term here, is a no-brainer. It is consistent with every piece of presidential law past and present. The records do not belong to Donald Trump. They belong to the people of the United States. And more particularly, they go with the presidency. And when the presidency says, yeah, sure, let it out. Well, there was nothing for shit for ex sort of president shit for brains to complain about. However, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, it did, however, put a 2-week stay on the release to allow what? Yeah, that's right. Nitwit Nero time to appeal to at least three justices who owe, of the Supreme Court who owe their jobs to him, and two that are ideologically aligned with him. And, well, one who just calls balls and strikes. Sure. Yeah. The D.C. Circuit wrote, the events of January 6th exposed the fragility of those democratic institutions and traditions that we had perhaps come to take for granted. Judge Patricia Millett wrote the opinion. CNN pointing out, who was appointed by former President Barack Obama. In response, the President of the United States, and she must be one of the rare judges Obama was actually allowed to put on the bench by chinless Mitch McConnell. In response, the President of the United States and Congress have each made the judgment that access to this subset of presidential communication records is necessary to address a matter of great constitutional moment for the Republic. Former President Trump has given this court no legal reason to cast aside President Biden's assessment of the executive branch interests at stake or to create a separation of powers conflict that the political branches have avoided. Now, the three-judge panel that heard this was unanimous. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and Judge Robert Wilkins both agreed with Judge Millett, and well, now it goes to the Supreme Court, and we will find out just how much Ann's boy Neil and Brett Kavanaugh. How'd your mortgage get paid again, there, Brett? Could you tell? No, can't tell. The secret is. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, Justice Handmaid Amy Covid Barrett. We'll see how much they feel like they really, really owe to Nitwit Nero, along with Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, one of two sexual abusers who sit on the court now, credibly accused, I should note. And then, of course, Sammy Bad Breath Alito. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As to Rachel Maddow running the Democratic Party, Matt in San Francisco says, they talk about Hayes and Maddow doing all the planning for the Democrats because they only have their own framework to judge others. Since the right-wing media propaganda pushers make up the marching orders for the right, they figure that must be the same way on the left. They are so transparent, Matt notes, in their obliqueness. Yeah, well, it's all projection. It's every last bit of it is projection. And, well, let's see. Got somebody on the line here. Let's find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's Dave in the Blind.
Hey, Dave, how are you? And how's Christine?
Christine's doing fine. As a matter of fact, she got some great news today.
Wonderful.
Her lawyers came back on that rent-to-own contract. Evidently, it's a 5-year contract. And she does have her VA loan privileges. So if the VA will guarantee the mortgage, she can undo that entire rent-to-own bullshit and just go straight to purchase.
Well, glory freaking hallelujah. Yep.
And she already talked to her bankruptcy attorney's paralegal and was told that, yeah, they could petition the court to make that happen. And she's already got several thousand dollars sent back just to put down on the down payment. So things are looking pretty good for her.
Excellent. That's excellent news. Every little bit of stress that can be taken off of her is a victory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's got an eye exam tomorrow. But I was telling her, I said, before this, before her lawyer came back, there was a skeevy little, we buy houses kind of scam here in Indiana that sells broken down houses to people at inflated prices. And it's a hybrid contract. And the Indiana State Supreme Court upheld it. Oh, yeah, they can go ahead and do that to Hoosier consumers. What do you expect from the state that gave us the John Birch Society?
Well, there is that.
You know. And today is the John Birch Society's birthday. So if somebody could go out and get plenty of fluoridated water to make your local conservative upset, then please do. Because you know how dangerous that fluoridated water is, Robin.
Fluoride, Mandrake. and little children's ice cream.
But
exactly.
Yeah, you know, Josh Duggar is not going to be able to go to the White House anymore, at least while he's on probation or parole, because it's a national park. Of course, half the district is some form of park. So, yeah, that'd be kind of a rough thing for him. Personally, I hope they max him out so his sisters can sleep at night.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, God, that family. And you know, while we're at it, I wonder if anybody, what was it, Discovery or TLC or whatever, I wonder if any of those people lost their jobs for being, you know, for promoting a family full of skeeves and creeps.
No, I doubt it. TLC is the network that did it. They've been putting this kind of crap up for years.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because...
Well, here comes Honey Boo Boo Child.
Those kind of programs are cheap to make.
And people would fall all over themselves to watch them. I never understood the draw, but... Oh, and by the way, speaking of Josh Duggar, nothing tells you more about than a photograph of Josh Duggar smiling, and his buddy is smiling like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Josh Duggar and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz in his pre-beard days, standing next to one another in a photograph. You know, two good, fine Christians together.
Well. Yeah, with all due disrespect to the senator from Winnipeg,
ouch.
You know, who also, like you said, he forgot while he was running for president of the United States to set aside his Canadian citizenship until somebody pointed out that, well, you can't be president and a citizen of a foreign country. So. I don't know. You know, Raphael's a sore spot with me. He's just the kind of guy that makes you want to just scrape your skin off every time you hear his voice. You know, I don't know. The state of Indiana is a very bizarre place, as you know. I mean, we have our own deviant political culture. You know, we our former governor, the guy who has to ask his wife everything and get mother's approval.
Mother. You're referring, of course, to Mike Pencilneck Geek.
Right, but I won't refer to him as the vice president, or former vice president, because, well, he wasn't that much of a governor to begin with. You know, I guess I could refer to him as Donald Trump's Jenny Jones crush. Because he always was looking with almost rapturous adoration at Donald Trump anytime he was standing behind him. You look at some of those pictures and you're thinking,
we're talking schoolgirl crush territory.
Oh yes. I mean, he's thanking God, which in his case would be thanking Don every day for his ability to serve him.
Here's a question, Dave. Here's a question. You think if Nitwit Nero had said, "Now, Mike, I just need you to put your head through this little noose here. You love me, don't you?"
Oh, he'd have done it. Yes, sir, Mr. President, sir. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he'd have done it. His successor, Holcomb, was chosen by 12 Republicans in a back room. Yet they will yell, holler, and scream if so much as two Democrats talk to each other on the street. So.
Backroom deal. Right. Wrong accent, but I get that.
Well, yes. Well, you might as well be, because Indiana might as well be Talabama.
I mean, Alabama, yes, Talabama with shittier weather.
Right. I mean, we have our Selma, too. It's in my home county of Delaware County. It's a little town of Selma, Indiana. You and I have talked about that. I think it's because, like you said, there were a lot of people that came up from Alabama and Virginia, and when they settled Indiana. So, never mind the people that were already here, but white privilege goes way, way, way back, and. I just think that, the right wing's going to go, poor Josh Duggar, he's being crucified for his beliefs. No, he's been convicted for what he did. You did it through your skulls, people. They like throwing the word pedophile around about anybody they don't like, but when it's one of their own, well, they're just being politically persecuted. Family Research Council, my ass.
I know. Well, that's the outfit that was first founded with an email list that Tony Norin, yes, Mother Bates Perkins. Got off and running by buying an email list from the Klan, from David Duke.
Well, and David Duke is only following in his Klansman history because D.C. Stevenson, to raise money for his legal defense after he was convicted, took the subscription list for the Fiery Cross, which was the Klan's paper, and was selling it to sold the subscription or parts of the subscription list and names of politicians that the Klan had in its pocket to the Indianapolis Recorder. Black Weekly. So, yeah, there's some skeevy shit that goes on with those Klansmen. I mean, Stevenson was released on a conditional pardon, which he violated often. The condition of his pardon was that he have a job and that he leave the state of Indiana never to return. Well, he ended up down in Alabama living with a family and ended up getting accused of molesting their 16-year-old daughter.
Yeah, when was this?
Back in the 1930s early 40s.
Well, tigers don't change their stripes and neither do skunks.
And of course, being Alabama, the charges were withdrawn. Because she allegedly recanted her statement. He died in like 1967 or something like that. I'd have to look it up. But he was around for quite a while after that. Personally, the man should have died in prison. I mean, I read the account.
In a just world.
I read his victims, a woman named Madge Overholzer, I read her horrific deathbed statement that she gave the police, and that was released to the press. I read that in the paper. This man, she had poisoned herself trying to kill herself. When she wanted assistance, she wanted him to drop her off at a hospital. When he refused, he said, or he told her no, he wasn't going to do it. And she said, I'll have the law on you. And he said, I am the law in Indiana. He never took her across state lines. He took her up to Gary, Indiana by private rail car. But he didn't cross into Chicago, because that would have triggered J. Edgar Hoover being able to grab him for kidnapping.
Right. And transporting across state lines for immoral purposes.
Exactly. Well, how much more immoral can you get than raping and killing someone? I went to school with a guy who actually lived in that house.
Who?
I didn't realize it until I saw a picture of the house on the History Channel when they were talking about it. But I went to school with the grandson of one of the prosecutors in that case, a man named Asa Smith, who was a Republican who had gone out searching for Ms. Overholtzer. He lived in the same neighborhood. And he despised Stevenson, could not stand him. And he went out with a pistol in his car looking for her. And to hear guys like Matt Gaetz, another wondrous soul, they're not going to change because there's no cost to them.
Well, there's no incentive.
There's no political cost. There's no legal cost. There's nothing. And what terrifies me is in the next year, as the election ramps up, you're going to hear a bunch of these right-wing tools cozy up to the Klan or to the White Aryan Resistance or any of the other number of.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to have to do. No, they're pre-cozied. Okay, that's what all the code talking's for. It's kind of like just as a bit of a diversion, Dave. The incoming governor of the state of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin. Now that dude. And
you mean the guy who suddenly illegally voted for him?
I think that's the case, isn't it? But
yeah, his oldest son, he was like 17. He went and voted for his dad when he wasn't eligible.
Lock him up. Well, hold on a minute, though.
No. Robin, if we're following the conservative Republican standard, I think the entire election needs to be rerun because we have proof of one fraudulent vote.
Election fraud. Yes.
Election fraud.
Well, I've mentioned it before, and I probably am nowhere near done mentioning it, but it really frustrates the bejesus out of me to hear these multimillionaires of the for-profit media going on about how he won without Trump, and going on about how he just, you know, he ran because, or he won because he talked common sense to Virginia voters, to the people who had previously voted for Biden but didn't want anything to do with Terry McAuliffe again. But what I can't tell is it intentional or is it ignorance that they don't understand what the dog whistle and the code is when he said, we're talking about parents' rights here. I'm running on a platform of parental choice.
It's intentional. they know what's going on, Robin. We had this conversation when you and I were talking to, when we were talking before about, do they understand what they're doing? Yeah, they know exactly. When we were talking to Todd, I said they know exactly what they're doing.
Because that parent's choice horseshit. He took an absolute shit ton of money from the Family Resource Council, I believe, and from other anti-LGBTQ hate organizations. And when they say parental control of schools, they mean the ability of the schools to torment non-conforming students, be it gender or sexuality. Any different drummer gets drummed out. And you better believe that the people who voted for him understood what that goddamn code meant, even if Joe fucking Scarborough doesn't.
Joe Scarborough does, Robin. He's not a stupid man. He knows exactly what he's saying. He knows exactly what he did to get Donald Trump elected. He's trying to distance himself now.
I'm tempted to believe that's true.
I mean, I disagree with Joe Scarborough on damn near everything. But I have never said the man isn't intelligent enough to know what he's doing. And he knows exactly what he's doing. He knew exactly what he was doing when he gave Donald Trump all that airtime for free. So that no matter which way it went, he could wring his hands and go, well, that wasn't what I intended. That's why Donald Trump says one thing and says the exact opposite thing 15 seconds later. So he can say, well, I never said that, or I said the opposite. Well, yeah, you said the opposite 15 seconds after you said the other thing. This is a speech tactic that they use. It's not enough for them to be right. They have to be seen to be right wing. Which is more important to them? Because they want that hardcore 35% of the voting public to keep sending them money so they can keep hurting that 35% going, we're improving your life. I mean, Robin, when you were a kid, didn't your mother tell you to cover your mouth when you coughed?
Yes, and not to chew with my mouth open.
Right, and not to chew with your mouth open. There were certain common things.
Wash your hands after you go potty.
Exactly. But now, according to the conservatives, you need to be angry with your mother about that because she was stepping on your freedom. That's what this whole mask thing is. It's a diversion. And they're going right along with it. Yes, you know.
Yep.
Yes, mein Führer. Let me boost it behind you, you know. I mean, it is no surprise to me that a man like Tom Metzger, who used to lead the White Aryan Resistance, lives in Indiana.
No surprise at all.
I looked at the Southern Poverty Law Center hate map. There are 8 hate groups that they've identified in Indiana alone. Only one of them might the Republicans have an objection to, and that's because they have the Nation of Islam on that site for its rhetoric.
Oh, speaking of which, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball had a Nation of Islam hissy the other day. Might be interested to know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's complaining that the political prisoners from January 6th are being abused in pretrial detention or in detention because they're being criticized for the color of their skin because the jail allows Nation of Islam teaching materials into the prison.
No, I see nothing wrong with that. In jail.
Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cue Ball, super genius.
However, I do have a problem with the media saying that there are only two Muslims in the Congress. There are four.
Well, I mean, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar,
Andre Carson,
yeah. And
I believe there's a representative from Michigan.
That was Rashida Tlaib.
No, it's a man. I think he's from Detroit.
Okay. I'm sure the research department will get on that. Hey, Dave, it's good.
It's definitely more than two because my representative is one.
Well, it's great talking to you. Like I said, I have to knock off a little early this evening, but I hope things continue to go well for you, and I hope things especially continue to go well for Christine. Please, please give her our fondest regards and tell her that she is much on our minds and our hearts.
I will, Robin, and she told me to tell you she loves you and is proud of you, and you're getting a big attagirl from her. So I told her about our conversation last week, and she said,
excellent.
You tell Robin that I love her and I'm proud of her, and there. So you got the attagirl going.
Yeah.
All right, Robin, I'll talk to you later.
All right, you have a great evening, Dave. Good hearing from you, my friend. You take care.
I will.
Right.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Dave in the blind calling from Talibandiana. Forgot to check in with the boys down at the shop, doggone it. Good fellas down there at Dave's, Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium. Glad to know Dave's keeping them in line. And Dave is a wealth of information when it comes to the vicious right-wing history of Talibandiana. I do have to knock off here in a few, but just a quick heads up. Keep an eye out tomorrow. Pay attention to your headlines and notifications. The Supreme Court may be up to something. A law professor from the University of Texas School of Law, Steve Vladek, went to Twitter today saying, SCOTUS announces it will hand down one or more opinions in argued cases tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It psyched us out before, but a Friday hand down day in December is more than a little unusual. And he goes on to predict that SB 8, the rat on your neighbor's bill, or the Ramirez Texas Capitol case have to be leading candidates. It would be something if here in the weeks prior to Christmas, you know, because there's some get out of town involved here, that they would hand down a decision on SB 8, the vigilante anti-abortion law that, well, makes no sense whatsoever, created a private cause of action. But today, by the way, is 100 days that that law has been in effect. 100 days that the rights of women to control their own reproductive organs has been in effect. And I forget where I read it, but I always love learning new things. The right wing and the fetus fetishists like to pretend that, you know, it's kind of like the old codger in Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, who says, "There's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon." The right wing likes to pretend that there's always been some sort of a ban on abortion. There has not been. Only as of 1910. Only as of 1910 did every state in the Union have an abortion ban in place. And as with everything else, guess what it's wrapped up in? You know it. Racism. It became absolutely necessary for the United States to control something that that up until then, or at least prior to the Civil War, had been pretty much the province of women. Women sorting out women's issues. And only as of 1910 did the state intervene, having created out of whole cloth a notion of its interest in controlling women's bodies. So I don't know. There's a possibility that come tomorrow, we will have some degree of, well, we will know one way or the other whether the $10,000 bounty law that a bunch of fetus fetish weirdos came up with will be struck down or remain in effect. And of course, there's also the matter of the retroactive abortions that took place as a result of mother and father Crumbly's decision to put a deadly engine of death in the hands of their 15-year-old kid. And today, survivors of the massacre perpetrated by the monster Ethan Crumbly, survivors filed a pair of $100 million lawsuits against the Oxford, Michigan school district and employees. The lawsuit was filed by a lawyer by the name of Jeffrey Feger, and he filed one federal lawsuit on behalf of students and siblings Riley Franz, a senior, and Bella Franz, 14, a freshman. Riley was shot in the neck while she was next to Bella. And the lawsuit accuses the school district and school officials of failing to take appropriate action to prevent the shooting. So we'll see how that plays out. In the federal lawsuit, the defendants are the superintendent, Timothy Throne, the high school principal, Stephen Wolf, the Dean Ryan Moore, and unidentified counselors, teachers, and staff members. Lawyer Feger said the horror of November 30th, 2021 was entirely preventable. At Oxford High School, they'll search your backpack if they think you're vaping, but they refuse to suspend or search a student who wrote what we now know was reams of homicidal notes and drawings, scenes of classroom slaughter, and mania. And he said he hopes to make the cost of allowing children to be slaughtered at school so high that necessary changes will be made. Lawyer Feger is apparently not one to mince words. He said, "We can't change the perverted values of the Second Amendment society that prioritizes gun ownership over the lives of our children overnight. But wait, maybe we can make it so costly that some lives may be changed in the future." He went on to say that Riley and Bella were shot down like they were in a war zone. Riley had been accepted into 6 colleges, and so she'll spend her holiday break focused on recovering from an injury that less than 2% of people survive. And Bella, next to her, was literally traumatized as if she was surviving in a war zone. This is not unique, he went on, the horror this family has to go through. And he named some teachers in the suit as well, because he said the school board has not been transparent about who was involved in the decision-making process that allowed the monster Ethan Crumbly to stay in school and not even bother to inform the police so-called liaison officer. And he documents the fact that multiple parents alerted Wolf, one of the defendants, to online threats on November 16th, fully half a month before it happened. Wolf had written, I know I'm being redundant here, but there is absolutely no threat at the high school. Large assumptions were made from a few social media posts. Then the assumptions evolved into exaggerated rumors. And, of course, Mr. Fieger has some expertise at doing this sort of thing. He represented the family of Isaiah Scholes, murdered in 1999 at Columbine. Yeah. I hope he's successful. I do. Congratulations to Randy Radar. Randy says he's feeling a little bit crappy, but they managed to glom a booster shot yesterday. Good. Good, Randy. It's better to feel crummy for a day than deal with the Rona. And one last thing before I head out the door. That toxic white supremacist neo-maxi Zoom dweeby, Tucker Carlson. Now, recently, somebody set fire to the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda Christmas tree. There is no truth to the rumor that I heard that Tucker Carlson was seen sneaking away while wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. But there was much pissing and moaning and gnashing of teeth on air on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, in which they actually, no kidding, blamed Joe Biden for the Christmas tree going up in flames. But this is the damnedest thing. In a conversation with Nigel Farage, who himself is a giant, whopping, dribbling dick of a human being, they talked about Bojo having had COVID. And Farage said that Bojo was quite sick. But you get the idea that Tucker has real, real masculinity issues. Not at all secure. Because he seems obsessed with issues. And so he declared that having COVID, and I'm not kidding, this is not a joke. I kind of wish it was. Tucker Carlson said that having COVID emasculates, no, really, emasculates people who get the virus. There's no data out there to support this madness. But Cucky Tucky is deeply hung up on what it means to be masculine. Let's go to the audio, shall we?
Leadership quality.
Yes.
We're going to go and climb that hill. And here's why we want to do it. And we invite you, the public, to come with us on that journey.
Amen.
That is leadership. And Boris, just with the best will in the world, doesn't have that. And we've seen more U-turns in policy from the Johnson government than I've seen in any government in my lifetime.
Yes.
And
in a very embarrassing way.
Oh, some of it's been shocking.
So somebody who knows him told me, and I should be interested in getting your take on this, that getting COVID emasculated him. It changed him. It feminized him. It weakened him as a man. Do you think that's...
Well, I think he was very seriously ill.
Yo, for sure he was.
And I think... I mean, one of the things we have learned from COVID is people who are 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds overweight tend to have fared very badly.
Sure.
Now, we don't talk about it
but
much.
But the virus itself, this is true, does tend to take away the life force in some people, I notice. I mean, it does feminize people. No one ever says that, but it's true.
Excuse me? As someone who has been feminized for about the last year and a half, I'm kind of perplexed here. Just what does he mean by that? I mean, no more stiffies? Is he saying Bojo can't, you know, Bojo anymore? Is that why the guy who used to be in charge of our B-52s is walking around with a rack of 52 Bs? Nitwit Nero? Because he had the Rona? No, he had those before he had the Rona. But further proof of my ongoing theory that this is going to be one of the signature issues that we deal with in the coming election cycle. Because, of course, feminization, bad. Men are supposed to be out there grunting and scratching themselves and, I don't know, picking at fleas jumping about amongst their chest hairs and pairing through each other's little pates like chimpanzees looking for lice to nibble on. God almighty. Really?
I think the virus did affect him, but I think, let's be honest about it, it's the new wife, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's, you know, Carrie Johnson, or as she's now called, Carrie Antoinette, which the historians like. This is a very powerful, very strong woman.
Wife is this, do we know? Or do we even keep
Bojo's wife is a castrating bitch. Okay, I get it now. I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to just follow Tucky around for a while and wait until you catch him? Because that kind of behavior's got a pathology behind it. But just pay attention. It's all over the place. And of course he's, well, not going anywhere because there are more people watching Tucker Carlson than anybody else on that benighted network. Damnedest thing. We'll save the Christmas tree story for tomorrow because I got to get out of here. We've still got the Don't Give Them the Chance challenge on the table, courtesy of Billable Rick. And it would be great if that could be met. $75 on a $1,090 fundraising hole would cut it down some. And it would be wonderful if that could happen. In the meantime, thanks to each and every one of you who are with your Patreon or PayPal subscriptions, help keep this program on the air. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky this evening in the chat room. And thanks as well to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And this would be a great time to reach out and ask your member of the House of Representatives to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act. Help end Appalachia's agony. Help end mountaintop removal. And, you know, help create a meaningful future for Appalachia. In the meantime, stay safe. Get your vaccine, get your booster. Again, congratulations, Randy Radar. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Carry your hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Use it religiously, liberally. I like liberally better. Wear your mask, maintain your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes wandering up towards you saying, COVID feminizes you. Well, if you're trans like me, don't go out and get the Rona just so you can get more feminized. And secondarily, if you're not, don't worry. Just try not to get it, because it's not the feminizing, which it doesn't do. It's the killing, which it does. Yeah. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.